Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
Hey, Jess, it is so great to have you on today. How are things in Raleigh?
Things are good. Finally getting some of that spring weather. And yeah, Raleigh's been great.
I am so excited that you were here with us today. You were actually just in Kalamazoo, a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And so we were excited to have you on campus at Western Michigan University as a member of the Board of Trustees. Thank you for being there.
Yeah, it was great to be there. Great to meet you all. And yeah, I'm excited to dive in even more.
Tell us, I think your story is so fascinating. You know, my bias is I love entrepreneurs. I love people who have social impact, but I also love people who are from places that have good barbecue. So like you check all three boxes
for me. Yeah, I'm a dream come true, aren't I? Yeah, no, I'm in North Carolina, as you said. I went to North Carolina State University, go Wolfpack, except you won't be seeing us in the Sweet 16 this year, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But when I was there, I was interning with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which grants wishes to kids with life-threatening illnesses. And I found kids that were losing their hair would be offered a lot of wigs or hats, something to cover up their heads. And a lot of their preference wasn't really to cover up. It was just to restore their confidence and self-esteem after hair loss. So I saw so many of the children wearing headbands, and it was a great way for them to kind of regain their self-confidence, express themselves through fashion in a different, unique way without hiding what they're going through with a wig or a hat. So I started to look up organizations that gave headbands to kids with cancer and realized that that was a connection that hadn't been made yet. And I took it upon myself to be the first. So my junior year of college in April 2012, I founded Headbands of Hope. And for every headband sold, we donate one to a child with cancer.
As I remember, that's now more than 100,000 that you've donated.
Yes, more than 100,000 headbands. And we've actually donated headbands to every children's hospital in America and some internationally now, about five countries.
I think that there's two things there that just overwhelm me. One, the need for more than 100,000 headbands in a really short period of time. That's less than a decade.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unfortunate how underfunded childhood cancer is. In fact, a lot of people think, you know, progress in adult cancer is progress in kids' cancer, when in fact, it's not like kids can just take a smaller dose of what the adults are taking. It's a whole different area of research. They're in such a developmental stage with their bodies. And also another thing to consider is socially too. I mean, there's kids that are in the middle of school and missing all these life events, or, you know, not being able to play on the soccer team or even go to prom, which is something that we're actually fixing. And for our 5-year anniversary next month, we're hosting a prom at Duke Children's Hospital for all the kids there. But you're right, it is something shocking. So we not only want to help the kids, we also want to make this a conversation and show people that this is a need that isn't being met.
What did you have in your background that helped you take the next step?
Yeah, it's funny because now looking back, I was like, man, what was I thinking? Because I don't really, of course, I love the outcome and I love what we've done, but I don't really ever remember a moment being scared or wondering if it was going to work or if it wasn't going to work. And I just remember having this almost fearless drive because I believed in the cause so much that I knew deep down that I was never going to let this fail. I was never going to just give up. And to feel so strongly about why I was starting this really helped just kick things into motion. And it was just the way that I was raised. My dad started a company when I was around 10 years old, and I saw him pour everything he had into this vision and work twice as hard for something that he really believed in, coming from, you know, 9-to-5 job. And, you know, I heard stories of my mom when she was in college and she just one day decided to bike across the country. And so she did it. And so I think growing up in an environment like that, where you're not afraid of failure, if you believe in something enough, there's nothing that can stop you. A combination of that and then being inspired by this I think, made me almost naive to the point of a benefit, because I never thought about how many businesses fail, or I never thought about if I needed investors or funding. I just worked with what I had, the resources that were there, and figured out a way to do it. So looking back, that fearlessness was something that I try to hold on to as much as I can, although it can be hard sometimes.
Yes, it can be.
Yeah, but I feel like the more you learn about the world, the more that you learn that what could go wrong, sometimes that can get in the way. And so I almost liked not knowing as much because I took more risks.
Well, and I agree. And you see the impact you're having. Mm-hmm. And as you grow that, you just don't want to lose the impact. You can't imagine that you're not there for a child in need. And so the stakes become higher the greater impact you have.
I agree. And I heard someone explain this one time about people who hit success at an early age. Sometimes that can be detrimental to future success because you almost become a prisoner of it. You have this track record that's been so good. You've done so much and you're afraid to misstep after that, or you're afraid this next risk or next startup isn't going to measure up to what you did before. And so I try to not let that get in my way. With as much as we've done, there's still more that can be done, and there's still different ideas out there, and we can still be innovative. And that might take some trial and error, just like it did in the beginning to start this, and to just to try not to be afraid of that.
How do you go from, you're in Raleigh, a great city, but not the epicenter of media, doing something for kids with cancer? You know, we tend to ignore those things. Nobody wants to talk about that.
Yeah.
To having this incredible impact and showing up on the Today Show and in Vanity Fair and 17 and Good Morning America and the campus of Western Michigan University. How does that happen?
A lot of persistence, I'll say, number one. And I will go back to that fearlessness and all of those things that you listed, you know, Good Morning America, Vanity Fair. I like to be open and honest that those didn't come without a bunch of doors slammed in our face around that. So again, it goes back to on the outside looking like you have this perfect track record. But really, you can get 5 great opportunities and great yeses, but those will probably come coupled with a dozen more no's than you get. And so it really went for, I was confident in my idea. I knew it was innovative. It wasn't being done anywhere else. It was a clear need that no one else was meeting. And so it was a recipe for success for the media because it was so innovative and so needed. And it's a great service to be able to share what we're doing and also raise awareness for childhood cancer and start that discussion. And so kind of showing them the value in that, whether that's through videos or through sending in pitches or through social media, we really did be able to put ourselves out there just because of the uniqueness of what we're doing. And even though we're in Raleigh, I think that if anything, shows that you can make a difference anywhere. You don't have to be in Silicon Valley. You don't have to be in New York. Wherever you are, we live in such a digital world now that you can reach so many people. It doesn't matter.
That was what I was hoping you were going to say.
Good lead in right there. Yeah.
So we have so many young entrepreneurs who really believe you've got to move somewhere to be successful, or that there's a magic formula other than just really working hard and believing in what you're doing and being tenacious.
Yeah. And I will say that it really doesn't matter where you are. I think you can surround yourself with people who lift you up, and that can be all over the world. But I think it is a lot to do with showing up to things. And that sounds so basic, but when I can point back to the times where my business really changed for the better, or we got a really great opportunity like press, or, you know, got into a store or something like that, it's been because I chose to surround myself and I chose to show up to something. And that could be in, you know, Kalamazoo and going there and meeting you guys. I think that if there's one piece of advice I have to get your story out there to be more innovative, it's maybe not always having an agenda, but just choosing to show up because that's where opportunities happen.
I think that's dead on. We just had a great conversation with John Acuff, who we both know. And we were talking about what he likes most about relocating from Atlanta to Nashville. And it was the fact that you just showed up to things and people integrated and worked together, and you just had serendipity seem to show up with you the more you showed up just to serve each other.
Right,
and
exactly.
I think that's what the world looks like today. It's so much easier than it's ever been.
Yeah, but I also think it can be challenging when everything can be done from your computer or everything can be done from your phone. Sometimes it's hard to justify, you know, getting up, going out, you know, and making yourself look presentable or something, and showing up to places and having those face-to-face interactions. But I think that's so important. And I'll say this little story about that. We, before Headbands of Hope got an office space, and I was just a college student trying to get this thing started. And we just had our first segment on a local news channel going to the hospital with us. And I didn't really want to go out that day. I just wanted to work from home. And I tried to just be like, okay, I'm going to go to Starbucks, work from my computer, just to kind of be out in the world. And I'm out there and this woman comes up to me and she's like, oh, were you Headbands of Hope on the news last night? And it was my first, you know, claim to fame. Someone recognized me on the local, you know, NBC news. And I was so excited. And I said, yes. And she said, I think it's just so great what you're doing for kids' cancer. And, you know, I would love to support you. So, of course, I give her the website and everything. And on her way out, she drops an envelope on my computer and then she leaves. And I still don't know her name. And if she's listening to this, I'd love to know who you are and thank you. But in that envelope was $1,000.
Wow.
And, yeah. And my first thought when I opened it up was like, what if I had stayed home today? You know, this never would have happened. And, I, you know, the point is you're not going to get $1,000 every time you walk outside, but you never know if that might happen or something like that unless you put yourself out there, because those kinds of opportunities can't happen to you if you're not present for them.
It's one of the things that, you know, I'm hoping we can kind of drill down on. What, from your perspective, when we see a world where clearly women still aren't granted is the wrong word, but granted parity in the workplace, where we're seeing pay disparity is still there. You know, women aren't represented in the C-suites the way they should. Speak to that a little bit, what you're seeing as a young entrepreneurial woman who's also got this incredible creative side in writing. You know, what are you seeing in terms of your perspective of women in the workforce and how we as a community of leaders can do a better job ensuring that we gain more traction around this issue of parity?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you brought this up. And to be honest, to start off, starting off my business, that wasn't really a stigma I was concerned with. I was more concerned with being 19 years old and people just, you know, not thinking I was seasoned enough, which we can get into later. But as I started to kind of gain more experiences, I did start to notice some of those barriers and some of those roadblocks. We never sought funding for Headbands of Hope. I bootstrapped the company from some of my internships, but I have heard of other female entrepreneurs that I've connected with that haven't received funding or have had a tougher time in that. And that is really bothersome to me. And one of the things that I've personally experienced, or just that I've noticed, is now as a speaker, I'll get interested in a speaking gig. And one of the reasons why they say that they're interested in me is because they need a woman speaker, which I appreciate their honesty, but I would hope that they would also just want a really good speaker, regardless of what my gender is. And to have to put in an effort to have to find a woman speaker, to me, just raises that flag of, okay, is there either just not enough women out there who are labeling themselves as speakers, or is that just always been the lineup and we need to change that? And one of the things, when I think about how we can change this, and it's kind of going back to the question before where I talked about being fearless and my parents and how I was raised, was just really starting that young, starting that in school, starting that with parenting, not just with self-esteem in girls and making them feel like they can have these opportunities, because there isn't as much examples to lead by as there are with men, but just treating everyone equally and starting that at a young age, I just feel is key. And that might be a cliche and basic answer, but when I guess you try to simplify how some of these social stigmas are formed, I think that's probably the most efficient way that we can debunk those and start moving forward and have more of a platform for women.
I think you're dead on. And I think the issue on women speakers is real. I happen to be the point leader of a female-run organization,
yeah,
which means I got here first. If I didn't, I'm not sure they would hire me. But the five team members that lead the whole organization on our management team are all women. And
yeah,
so it's something that was really important that we had maternity leave that matched the needs of the organization. But then they said, you know, we need paternity leave because it's important that the man be there, be integrated, and that we get his best self when we're here at work. So let's talk about that. And then we expanded it to adoption leave as well.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Now that I hadn't heard of yet, but obviously equally as important. That's great that you guys have already adopted those and used it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. And, you know, the truth is if you have amazing people on your team, they're going to get the work done anyway.
Exactly.
So the idea of somehow we can control outcomes by trying to manipulate those kind of little things, it's not realistic. Empower people. We refer to it as CEO of your own responsibility.
I, as
the CEO, have so much flexibility to manage the organization so long as I get everything done at the end of the year. And we want everybody to live and work in that environment. And that means treating them with respect. Clearly, we're a consulting firm, so we're unique. Nobody's showing up the emergency room expecting us to fix them at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we can offer these things, and we do, and think it's important.
And I think CEO of your own responsibility is what millennials, and I know that maybe we'll tap this a little bit, is what millennials are really striving for and looking for in jobs is just that trust and that freedom to get your job done, but do it on your own time and in your own way. I think is something that is a different way to work than what previous generations have done.
No, I think that's key. And that's exactly where I was going was, and the key word I think there is different. It's not less, it's not lazy, it's not any of those. I think as World Economic Forum just came out with study that said millennials disproportionately are, I think their word was hyper workers, in that they're working more than 70 hours a week in greater numbers than has ever been done by a previous generation. So these are people that work hard, but want to work creatively and in their own parameters. Are you seeing that too?
Oh, definitely. And I think one of the key indicators with that, I think, is also meaningful work. I feel millennials are intrinsically motivated. And I want to go back to what we were saying about being different, because I think, you know, like you were saying, sometimes that different can be misinterpreted as being lazy or, you know, self-centered. And I think that different generations are shaped by the world and economy around them. And understanding that the economy is always changing, that also comes with the understanding that that means generations will be changing too. Which is also what I think makes it so great is to have different people of different values and different habits, especially inside of a company where you have these differences of opinion that can see both sides. But I think that millennials, you know, came up at a time where the economy wasn't so great and maybe they saw their parents getting laid off from jobs or, you know, these things where the American dream, that 9-to-5 and the white picket fence wasn't really there for them anymore. And so they started to identify a new American dream that was specific to them, which is freedom, which is meaningful work, which is being valued, understanding that you're a part of the solution. And I think that that's where our differences come into play. And obviously technology and different things that we're adapted to play a role in that as well. But I do think this has started from the time in which we grew up and just a difference of American dream. And I think if other generations can understand that, maybe we can have more of a collaborative atmosphere in the work environment rather than, you know, this hard line of a difference of age.
Absolutely. You know, my grandfather, who was part of that greatest generation, you know, went off to war and, came back and kind of rebuilt America and rebuilt the world for that matter.
Yeah.
Used to say, you know, every generation is the best and the previous generation always thinks they're lazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's the truth that every generation, particularly in America, gets stronger, gets taller, gets smarter, does more amazing things, has more social consciousness. We build and compound on each other, but it's, I guess, human nature to want to believe differently. I always love the people who complain about millennials that they're the trophy generation. And I go, well, who bought them those trophies?
Who gave them
the trophies? Go and look in the mirror. You paid for all those. You have a credit card receipt somewhere for it.
Yeah. No, it's such a good point. And yeah, I think that if we can understand that really what millennials want is to work for something meaningful and not just a paycheck or benefits, but understand why they're there. You know, what am I doing every day and how is that making the world better? How is that making our mission better? I read a stat the other week that was 50% of millennials would take a pay cut to work for something that's meaningful to them. So it's really not about their financial bottom line. It's about their personal bottom line. And I think the overarching way to engage millennials and empower them in the workforce is to make them have an understanding of the value of what they're doing and the belief that they're an integral part in that. They don't want to just be a number on the roster or one of 200 cubicles in an office. They want to know that this 5 minutes I'm putting into this actually matters. So it's painting that picture for them and making that clear from the get-go. You'll have more engaged millennials and you'll have those work habits that you were referring to before where they don't just have to work, they want to work because they know it's meaningful.
Yeah, no, I couldn't have said it better and that's dead on. You know, before we go, who's inspiring you today?
Oh gosh, lots of people, but I'm always inspired by my dad. He had two kids and decided to leave a 9-to-5 job to be an entrepreneur, which worked out well for him. And to have that as my core and to have that as a part of my childhood and to see, you know, my mom be a part of that ride too, really humanized the idea for me that I could make a change. And it made me believe that there's no such thing as a perfect time. There's no such thing as having, you know, all your plans in place or all the money that you need. And the reality is the perfect time is the moment that you're inspired. So to have that be so clear in my childhood is the heartbeat of what I do today. So him and my mom always inspire me.
So you just made all the dads out there really proud that you didn't that you didn't come up with, you know, Bono or somebody, you know. We all hope our children say that too. So listen, before we get away, how can people be in contact with you? Twitter, Facebook, your website, how can they best connect to you?
Oh, I'm everywhere. So you can go to headbandsofhope.com and that's where you can learn more about what we do. We also have a contact page on there. All of our social handles, Instagram, Twitter, at Headbands of Hope. And me personally, you can go to jessekstrom.com and you can
that's
find me there.
E-K-S-T-R-O-M.
Correct. Good job. Yes. Jessekstrom.com. And I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome, Jess. I really thank you for being with us today. And I'm really looking forward to announcing pretty quickly that we arranged for you to come back to the community and meet with 2,800 of our closest friends.
And I'm so excited for that day. Thanks so much, Ron. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.